I think, you know, my part is the broadcast-to-broadcast part, so I'm trying to understand how this applies to this part of it. The listener part is less my issue. I think that's possibly more Brian's issue than mine. What I need, I understand that on some level this isn't really a huge change from the world we live in already. It's more of a clarification. The truth is that even in my world, which is the selling to other radio stations world, the truth is almost everything that we sell right now, radio stations could get for free somewhere else. And that's kind of a fact of life that I've had to live with. I've had to learn to deal with. And so I think in a way that's just being a little bit more clear about that. And there could be an advantage to this because by clarifying it, we could possibly make it easier for me by making this kind of a defined situation instead of one where now where I kind of improvise as I go along. I think what I would need is really the time and access to. I'm sorry, I can't remember the Norris.
Dr. Lessig.
Right, and I understand that it's a tremendous opportunity for us to work with him. What I really would need would be the time to be able to talk this through with him. In my work, when I have the ability to speak with a lawyer, it is tremendously helpful to kind of really think through the ins and outs of this, and that's what I would need. I would need the ability to really run this through. So, and the other thing I'd like to say about it is that when I started working in my job, I was, trying to figure out what the deal is, and it became clear to me pretty quickly that the landscape that we live in now, the market, so to speak, is not one where Pacifica anymore, even within the Pacifica stations, do we have, a corner on the market anymore in terms of generating content. Content is being generated everywhere, wonderful content throughout the whole country, not only at our affiliate stations, but also by independent producers and everywhere else. And therefore, I have moved the affiliates program more towards a service model as well as a content model. And, some of you might know who Jeremy Landsman is. He is kind of this old-time radio genius type, and he joined the network recently. He's up in Alaska. And he, after affiliating for, a month or two, he talks to me regularly. He said, I'm starting to ask myself why affiliate with Pacifica. I can get all this for free somewhere else, and I'm ruminating about this. He says, well, it's because it's nice to have it all in one spot, so it's easier to access, which is in a way what Pete was referencing, that the stuff is free, but he's getting like an upgraded version. He gets it through the audio port, through the satellite, and so it's easy for him to do it that way. So what I'm getting at is that the truth is that Pacifica is still very, very undeveloped in that area. Our service is shaky. We don't have great customer service. There's only, it's a very skeleton crew. We don't have a satellite operator. We have minimal operations staff, and we have minimal infrastructure. And the truth is, the service end of what the affiliates are getting is shaky. And I would be in favor of this, of clarifying this. But what I would want to say is that it would be very important to do it within the context of understanding that the other areas of what we offer need to be seriously, that we begin to seriously think about that, because we don't get serious about that yet, because it's kind of like the technical part that's hard to think about. But within the context of really taking that serious, what does that mean? It means technology, it means client relations, and it means national marketing strategy, so that we have a political strategy to stand for something in this country. We have those things. I think people will want to stay with Pacifica. If we don't start taking care of those things, if we don't give reliable broadcasts, and we don't carry on good customer relations, people will prefer to deal with the producers directly. You know, that is a constant struggle with democracy now. Stations feel like, why do I need Pacifica? I'll just deal with them. And that will continue to get worse.
Just to say, LESIC also offered to do heavy fundraising. We said, you know, we would need to do some heavy fundraising to people to develop this infrastructure. And he felt that if we established ourselves as a leader in this type of, you know, service to the broader community, that he offered, unsolicited, to actually go out and twist arms to help us raise money. Rob, you had something quickly? My idea would be to spend that money to build the infrastructure.
But it's not just about money. It's about, you know, staying the network, that you're remaining a network, right, and having a reason to stay together.
I was just going to ask, Ursula, isn't it the case that we continue to have a problem with interrupting, for example, the headlines?
Yeah, we still are notorious throughout the country for just devastating infrastructure on all levels.
And it would be possible for us to put a fail-safe system in place very easily so that didn't occur.
Okay.
But we won't do it.
Brian?
Hey,
Lonnie, you want to go before Brian? And before a quick announcement, about a dozen of us got violently ill from, I think, food poisoning or something else. It's been suggested that those of us that did write down, Ambrose, this suggestion that we write down what we ate so we can figure out what the hell did this to us all. Brian, go ahead.
That's really something. I'm really sorry to hear that. I didn't go to the party last night.
Oh. It was here, and at least 10 of us were up all night.
Sorry, so back to the subject then.
Yes.
The exciting world of licensing. I think as the archivist, I have been in this realm of licensing and the usage of Pacifica's material, particularly with the archives, for a number of years. I think the last meeting we heard from John Krigler, and he talked about licensing and what a problem the archives has in having to clear rights from the past before we can really do anything with it. These really are the voices of Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Coretta Scott King, et cetera. And it really would take an overwhelming clearinghouse to get to the point where we could really do a marketing plan with the archives. I think this is really talking about the future and the current programmers going forward, that which you can sort of put together a contract in place before we go, right?
But also anything where you had rights sprinkler and you knew it could be, if you were interested in it, we were interested, submitted to the sub-archive. So it's not a suggestion to do everything. It's the stuff that makes sense.
Right. I think it's a healthy discussion. And actually, when you introduced Dr. Lessig, I didn't hear his credentials or his background for the public. So would you mind introducing why he was invited to the program?
Professor Lessig is a professor of law at Stanford University. He was best known, perhaps, as the special master in the U.S. versus Microsoft case. Does everyone remember that? He advised Judge Barrington Parker on the issues there. He also, I can't remember the names of his books, but he's been writing on the issues of intellectual property and licensing on the internet for probably 15 or 20 years now. He's one of the key consultants to the what is it, PC? The magazine?
He's an editor for Wired.
He has a website that's called Creative Commons. So if you want to check his work out, it's at www.creativecommons.org. But all of the people, the movie people, the record company people, are enthralled to him because he is the key authority on the legal issues around the internet. His basic feeling is that the legal structure of licensing and intellectual property should be built around the structure of the technology. It should not be developed to serve the interests of the large corporations. But he is not an opponent of intellectual property. He is a respecter of intellectual property. Thanks.
And he's also a board member of the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Can everybody be quiet,
and all of that. So Brian, that's sort of the thumbnail.
Yeah, it wasn't to satisfy me, because I'm familiar with his work, but I wanted to be sure that the public, as we heard him, understood where it came from.
I have just one additional thing to note here. I put it on the Google, and I looked around the Professor Kessler, whatever it is, Lessig. and he also served as on the under Judge Scalia.
Oh God.
So I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows.
And before you get to
he's a conservative that's in recovery.
Okay. Well,
I just want to say that was the most painful year of his life, where he's constantly attacked by this fellow clerk.
Well, I think
it's on his fault.
Right, I think it's more about the issue, and I have to say, you know, in going to seminars with the Association of Recorded Sound Collectors, hearing from copyright expert from the Mellon Foundation, she was actually very concerned about public radio and public media taking less of a serious, respectful stance on intellectual property and the rights of artists. You know, Pacifica Radio Archives certainly has a lot of arts and literature and poetry and music, and those people and the programmers that I've talked to with stations are concerned about this too, about their ability to draw in people who wouldn't be willing to have their material given out. So I'm glad we're having the discussion, but I would want to put, you know, Dr. Lessig and John Krigler and the person from the Mellon Foundation in the same room that actually have a town hall meeting or a panel discussion, rather than having to have me come up when I'm really not the expert. It's just my experience with the archives. It's been very difficult to get to the point where we could get to the point where you propose we go.
I want to go to Lonnie, and then we'll go to the board, and then we have public comment. Difficult issues. I think, though, that if I could break it down into just three questions that seem like the questions to ask. And that one is, who shall have access to Pacifica's content? And what will be the way that content is to be distributed? And to whom? Let's just take those three questions. Pacifica now sits as a creator of original content. And the question, as I see it before us, is how best to make and distribute that content available to others. So I'm just taking it very simple. I'm not an expert on licensing. But here's the way my mind works as a finance person. First question is, if we cannot see the dollar figures coming back for the release of that content, we need a model for that. You just want to see who else is doing it, whether it's working. You can't do the service, you gotta go, who's doing it and making it work? So that would be the first simple question. On what basis does it work? There may be several ways to make it work, but you need to know which one will work for Pacifica. The second one is, who's the audience? Who will take this content? And there are three possibilities of audience. There's a group of tech-savvy people who will. But then you want to look at people who want to generate content that are not as savvy, but they're podcasters and other folks. The question here for me is, how many of those are there? Pacifica's group, Pacifica's audience, may or may not be numerous in terms of tech-savvy. That's a pain proposition. The last question is, you do see that a new model in terms of Pacifica as a content broker, that is, we broker for others on whatever basis, licensing and whatnot. And you do want to know whether in performing the brokering function, there are sequelae to assuming that function. There are sequelae to in terms of technical expertise, equipment, staffing even. So there are other parts to making the model work. And Disney is a critical issue, and it has some critical components to it. I do see and believe that Pacifica, as the holder of content, which it does nothing productive with, is not a good place to be. And we have to move beyond that. Now, the last thing I'll say is that I do believe, too, that like many new projects, there are a lot of questions. But I do think that one way to move forward on it is to look at it as this R&D project, do a pilot on it. You want to know what works for Pacifica, and if there's a way to demonstrate that, without going into it 100%. So I think that it's necessary. And I talked about alternate models before. This one is a possibility. And you want to know is it a network model, station specific, or maybe a third, not even a station model at all. Maybe it is a production company we're talking about. You know, there are lots of ways to do it. So my bottom line is, it's worth exploring. I wouldn't advise committing to it 100%, but a phased in pilot project to see what will work for Pacifica is obviously what wants to do.
I remember my one comment. You said that Pacifica is a producer of content, and in fact, we have a large number of producers at Pacifica who create content. And one of the things in the future is, will producers, if our licensing is restrictive, want to collaborate with us when they have innumerable other platforms for reaching audience? So in a sense, we are competitors for talent as much as we are producers of content. Okay, I'm gonna go to a couple board members. There are a couple people here in the audience, Ken, Aaron, and Mansoor Sabah, who are both actively involved in creating this kind of content that I'd also like to get to. Lisa and then Bob.
I just want to say I think that this is absolutely exciting and fascinating, and while some of the issues that are being raised are certainly legitimate ones that need to be concerned with, but in the long run, I think this will just grow Pacifica and will add so much. I just want to remind people briefly from my brief study of certain things, whenever there's new technology, especially technology that affects like recordings and video productions and stuff like that, there have always been these kind of concerns raised. Like when the VCRs came out and the industry being afraid that people are going to be copying their stuff and take money away. When I believe HBO and the advent of making these movies so accessible and all this kind of stuff. We find out that we can't record enough movies. We still go to them. We rent the DVDs and then we buy them and we record over and over again. So, I just think that this is very exciting. And just one other thing, and maybe somebody else can comment on this, but I know that one of the main industries that was really brought the issues about downloading things and everything was the music industry. But I also thought that I heard that they were also finding that by doing that, it was also making some musicians that people would not have even heard of, that it was making them a little bit more popular. Didn't they begin to make money from that, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah, so it's a lot of interesting things are fascinating.
I agree with Lisa about the insight potential. We had comments that open source and all that. I want to pick up on something Dave mentioned about the producers, the many producers, plural, who generate content. And although I'm certainly not a lawyer and I haven't talked to any lawyers about this yet, having talked to some unpaid staff at BAI and other stations, it's clear that there's a different legal status for the unpaid producers of content for Pacifica and the paid, who are, as far as I know, considered a work for hire that has a different kind of copyright. So we need to study these issues very carefully and fully consult the unpaid staff at all five stations before we craft a policy on this, which is why I did not favor moving forward with the commercial sale and syndication provisions of the national programming policy, because I think it's way premature to come up with any policy on that before we've consulted both our own unpaid staffs and attorneys who are knowledgeable. Those of us who are unpaid staff obviously are committed to building Pacifica and helping it generate money, and on the other hand, we don't want to have our time and effort and energy exploited. So I think we have to figure out what is the balance. So I would just encourage people on the board from the five stations, particularly staff representatives, maybe take the lead in trying to promote, and I'll do that at WBAI, to promote some dialogue among your staffs as to what is our view on these issues.
Aaron, can you make a comment about Google Video and Mansoor about what you're doing with audio productions and a producer?
Am I? I'll speak loud.
No, wait for the mic.
Mic is here.
Okay, 2 minutes.
I can't talk that fast, but okay. No, I'm just distributing information on some videos that I shot, produced on Google. The video is video.google.com. But if you haven't been there, you're in the 1950s. And that's one site that's streaming media for free. And they have a model where you can get reimbursed. You can. You make a video, you can sell it. They take 30%. They also have a contract with CBS for certain, like I Love Lucy's. Or you can put it up and stream it for free. If you put it under a Creative Commons license, nobody's going to rip it off. And you can say non-commercial, non-derivative, don't mess with it, leave it alone, and attribute it to me. And you can show it anywhere. That protects me legally on a lot of issues. But the point is, I can get out there, and we're getting what is a very satisfactory response for the political information we're putting out, which is like interviews and a couple of composite seminars I put out. So I'm broadcasting, and everybody here can broadcast your own content. You can broadcast your son skateboarding or Noam Chomsky lecture you take. And if you put it out on Creative Commons, you're not selling it, there's not going to be any threat of copyright infringement. So the point of this is the landscape is changing. And any regulations or procedures or principles you want to do, if you have a committee and people get together for 3 months, they have to come up with a flexible collection of methods and procedures. I'm really amazed that everybody keeps talking about if I give it away, I can't sell it. First of all, the aggregation of information is valuable. That's why they sell those doo-wop videos on KCET. You know, they just pull together some old content, package it, right? I'm sure they have to pay royalties, but it's the process of accumulation that has value. It's like a collection of Martin Luther King lectures, whether we had them originally or had to purchase them or whatever it was, or Chomsky lectures. But the other issue is that I don't understand is you can distribute free and cheap and full bore. You can put out 40 minutes of a one-hour lecture, but you have to buy the full lecture. You can put out a collection with annotations on the side, notes and commentary, like when you buy a DVD with comments of the director. But you can watch the movie for free and pay for it yourself, but you're not going to get that side content. And people have a collective nature, and there's different audiences, and people leave Christmas gifts, so there's different markets. So you have to, if you're going to distribute a product for an exchange, you have to market it, you have to attract, you have to put, to stay within the socially correct phrase, you have to advertise it. You have to show a little bit to get some attention. But then you can sell the full boat. So the idea of, and this is just the last thing I want to say. If you're in a business where you're trying to promote and disseminate, you can't hide and withhold. Have to at least appear to be affluent. Hey, I want to tell everybody. And therefore, you can't say, no, don't look at this. And I have stuff I can't tell you. So I'm just saying, it's a changing landscape. You pull out your cell phone, in 6 months, you'll be able to watch a movie, you will. Or listen to KPFK directly over the internet, not even podcasting. But things are changing technologically. So whatever you do, just be flexible. And ready to move and change and have all kinds of licensing agreements with different producers and on your content distribute different qualities and versions.
Sam. That's Mansoor. And then a couple more board comments and we have to move the agenda. And then we'll go to public comment and everybody in the audience can say whatever they have on the mind.
I think the question that needs to be broken down.
Can you introduce what you do with Global Voices for Justice first?
Well, I think what we do, we should say, you're LA Sound Posse and Global Voices for Justice. We started this thing 4 years ago, and then we started Global Voices for Justice 3 years ago. And we go anywhere physically from Santa Barbara, which is like 120 miles from here to Santa Barbara, another 100 miles.
San Diego, yeah.
To collect sound, and we speakers come to town, and we go up there. They have got to know us a little bit, you know, anywhere from Angela Davis, Howard Zinn, and David Barsamyan, and speakers at UCLA. They come and we know people, they know us, that we put their content on KPFK. And as soon as you say KPFK, they want to like kiss you all over, so on and so forth. It's like, you know, wow. And it is wow, you know. Really, when you're from outside and somebody tells you your content would be. So, and they are willing to sign up a petition that say it's free for all.
A release.
A release. And so we do all this work, and I think for you and for us, it takes about 20 to 25 hours from the start to finish to get one program going. And that's a lot of hours for 1 hour content on the air. And the release form always says that we are, because our main objective is to disseminate information, and how do you do that? The way to do it is on the CD, somebody wants to give a donation, $5-$10, and we definitely ask them, it's like, make 20-30 copies, give them to your friends and family members, those who are borderline. They don't know what's going on, you think, you know, they need to know. So this is an incentive to get them to support ours, and your Sound Posse and Global Voices, we've been negative for 4 years. You know, it's out of pocket. You know, we don't, I think, so what it comes down to is this. For programmers on Pacifica, we do have a staff, paid staff, and that's a different issue than somebody like us who are non-paid staff. And what it comes down at the end, we do a cart that it says, if you want to get a copy of this or other programs by us, call us at this number or visit our website. And lo and behold, a lot of people do listen, they call and make comments, you know, great, but maybe 10 of them wants to purchase it, you know, so, I mean, that's minute compared to what we spend to get the collect the sound. So that's the issue that's coming down. So like, when it's aired, and some people make a request for the copies, who gets the money? Well, we get some of it, and then Archive gets our audios too, you know, complete, and they use it. So it's like, it's not really that we're going to make that much money. I'll be happy if I break zero. I would break even.
And if so, the license being contemplated would if producers are making money, Pacifica would get a portion of the proceeds over the amount. So it encourages them to build distribution, but in that sense, Pacifica would get money.
Yeah. That as well, if we could like talk with Archives, that if they sell some of our stuff, we would appreciate to get some of the money too, because it's a lot of work and money involved. So, but I think the main issue is for the non-paid staff, we should have different licensing that can allow us to provide good content that people listen to and allow us to do whatever it's necessary for us to, via that we sell or ask for a donation, not that we ask for money to for purchase, but it's a donation that sustains us, and that's all I have to say.
I think that takes us to time. And the next thing, is there any other comment from the board? We actually have 2 minutes left. If there's no further comment, then we can say, yeah, Pete.
Just very quick, I want to say, I hear all this generating of content, and I'm thinking of program directors squirming and getting upset. You know, their producers are going to go bashing on their doors. BBC has BBC One, BBC Two, BBC Only 12 on their website, where they have 12 different simultaneous channels, maybe more by now. We have technologies that we're using in Pacifica right now in place where we can replicate that and have multiple KPFKs available. So all this content we're generating, the surplus of content, we can leverage and bring it to the audience without having to, you know, infringe on the 24/7 grid we have.
That's one of those points. I think to improve the quality of volunteer-produced programming, you need to produce 1,000 hours for every 168 you air and cherry-pick the best 10%. Anybody can do a brilliant program sometimes. Some people do a brilliant program a lot of time. Most people's effort most of the time is their median effort. You know, it's not neither their best nor their worst. So if our air is people's median effort, you know, we can improve it by having a place to put a lot of the content if we can attract all those content producers. Anyhow, public comment is up next. I need to go sleep for a while. I promise to listen to all of it on the archive recording. And I'm sorry, we'll take over public comment.
We have 45 minutes.
And this one right here.
Well, if I may, so we'll just take a couple of minutes each speaker. The first one is Kilgore. Next one is Maxine Dugan.
Hi. I want to thank you all for referring the motion around Paul DiRienzo to the Governance Committee. I think that the issues raised were sufficiently complex to require a lot more thought and a lot more looking at. I do want to say, with regard to the issue of his constituency that, as far as I know, he did not run on a platform of consistent disruption of meetings, and therefore I'm not sure exactly who he represents at this point. There have been some surmises, but I think this also speaks to the issue of trying to tailor a motion and how things will be done in general to a specific situation, which I also spoke to yesterday. If you're trying to tailor how things are always going to be done to the situation of a specific person who you want to be treated in thus and such a way, then you have to consider, is this how you want the person that you like least to be, you know, the person who may, you have to think about how this is going to run down with everybody. Same thing with if managers are going to decide who is unpaid staff, right? If you put them in that conflict of interest, it may be fine if you share the manager's politics and you share the manager's assessment of all the unpaid staff, but things change. Another manager comes, and then everything is topsy-turvy. So I just want to put that out there. I do want to thank you for taking a more considered approach to the situation that we're facing in New York City. And I wanted to say that I'm looking forward to seeing you all in New York City in June on my birthday. So thank you very much. And I also must bid you adieu, as my most wonderful nephew is about to take me to the airport.
Next speaker is Maxine Dubin. Next is Harrison Wild.
Brothers and sisters, my name is Maxine Dubin, and I serve the KPFA Labor Collective as their liaison to KPFA. And I love KPFA, and I love Pacifica, and I love democracy. And I really, really appreciate everybody who is here today and appreciate the changes in the format in the meeting to accommodate some of the difficulties in getting through some of the struggles that we're having so that we can move forward. I'll just tell you a little quick story. Martin Luther King Day, 4.5 hours of production, Labor Collective, 15 hours post-production. Our special day of programming was canceled. They decided that they wanted to air 2 hours of Persian music. They decided that they wanted to air a show on breastfeeding on Martin Luther King Day. Now, we know Martin Luther King and the whole civil rights struggle had some foundation in labor. So, we're looking at podcasting. So, we have all this fabulous content that we produced and trying to find a way to get it out. We think about podcasting, we think about those other channels, we think about a labor portal, we think about Pacifica, we think about how to bring the issues of labor and Pacifica together to create an outlet to serve our all common interests. And those are some of the things that we think about.
Harrison Wild, and after that is Richard
Cox. I want to speak in favor of grassroots participation. When you amended Section 12 of the programming policy, I think you diminished the accountability of the National Programming Coordinator. You voted to have the coordinator implement national programming, not as before a collectively determined programming policy. And I hope you'll fix this when you work on the job description. I also want to speak against the erosion of democracy by having the board majority add more directors. I'm in favor of affirmative action and diversity. I want Spanish language programming to be broadcast nationwide, and I want more progressive political programming at the two stations which have the fewest listeners. But I don't want to get that from an arbitrary authority. I want to build consensus, and I want it to happen from the grassroots. I don't want to erode democracy by letting the board choose more of the board members. I don't want to erode accountability by having the board appoint members who don't have a constituency and don't have to answer to anyone for the motions that they bring before the board. I don't want to twist Pacifica to comply with CPB. There are other ways to achieve diversity. we could have affirmative action and we could figure out how to do it in the bylaws convention. There are white members who could resign. The affiliate directors could be found who are persons of color. We're going down a road here that led to the last hijacking. Perhaps most of you are aware of the history where the board expanded itself, it disengaged itself from the local boards, it complied with the CPB, and then we were in a great deal of trouble. And so I hope you'll be aware of this and try to prevent it from happening again.
Good afternoon. I want to say, you know, I've been involved in this process for a long time, and I hope someday I can come to one of these meetings and not have to be the kid that says the emperor has no clothes. I really hope for that. As well, took a lot of what I had to say, but I have some other things to say. Let's see Greg in here. What I wanted to say to him is he said he didn't want to take sides. I want him to take sides with the truth and with progressive principles. That's something I see really lacking here. Justice delayed is justice denied. I didn't see anybody from WBAI on this board say, okay, look, put that aside and we'll go back and put him on. And we'll deal with the content later. No, this is a political punishment. And damn it, if Pacifica is about anything, it's not that. I mean, you know, we have to treat those people that we don't like with due process. Everybody has to be treated with that, because if you let somebody treat somebody else that way, next month they can be doing it to you. And that's, you know, I mean, it's just amazing that people can sit here and vote. This guy's been off that board for over a year. But the thing that strikes me the most is, where is the outrage from the New York majority, the same people who cost this organization thousands of dollars by supporting an ED who would not allow director's inspections, backed him to the hilt against transparency, a fundamental progressive principle. You know who I'm talking to, people. Where's your apology? You're demanding this man give an apology. He didn't cost this organization thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours of director's time meeting over an issue that is in the bylaws and the law as an absolute right. Where are those apologies? I want to see them, and I'm going to keep on these people in this until I hear some. Okay, because it has nothing to do, fighting transparency has nothing to do with progressive principles, revolutionary principles, or Pacifica mission. Okay, it was a political thing, it was done for political purposes, all right? And just about the slanderous things that have been happening, I've been getting red-baited because I stand up for these principles. Red-baited in this organization. And some of the people on this board here have been giving aid and comfort to that LSD member that's been doing it. Good night and good luck.
Next is John Wenger, and after him is Lawson Vigio.
Yeah, I have a variety of comments. With regard to the most recent discussion, the licenses, I strongly suggest that just as you don't have a one size to shoot for Pacifica, or one size to shirt for Pacifica, you don't have one license for Pacifica either. If it makes sense to have multiple shoe sizes, it surely makes sense to have multiple licenses for different purposes. So please consider that. There's a general problem in America and the world, the general privatization of the commons. We're now buying water, soon we'll be buying fresh air. The corporations are taking over more and more of the things, and intellectual property is also being taken over. It's devastating the development of software, the notion of intellectual property. Pacific should consider taking a stance for the public, for the commonization of intellectual property, and that should strongly influence its licensing thing. True, you may need to have a private exclusive license for certain special performers, but in general, for intellectual property, the goal should be the maximum commonization of the information, and minimization of the privatization of the commons. With regard to the suspension of the delegates, yeah, you're punishing Paul DiRenzo, but a bunch of people did vote for him, and I don't know what his constituency is either, but whoever did vote for him, they've lost their representative. And that is anti-democratic, democratic, and I believe that's anti-Pacific, and you guys should ponder the consequences of that. What Harrison said, the proposed amendment amplifies the board majority That's anti-democratic and sets you on the road for a self-selecting board. The board nominates these new people, the board votes on them, the listers are left out. That's anti-Pacific, and think about that carefully. And consider what you're doing it for. You're doing it for a little money from the corporate, from the CPB. If you do that, you'll be selling Pacifica on the cheap, and I believe that that's penny wise and pound foolish. You have a diminishment of income. You need to address that with good programming and work smart to increase your revenue and decrease your costs, and don't sell your foundation for a few hundred thousand dollars. It's just stupid.
Thank you. Love with you. And then after her is Ken Aaron.
I just want to urge the board to consider forming a fundraising committee to cover election costs, because it's high. For us, it would be $70,000. And if each member on the LSV raised $2,000, we can easily cover it. So it's simple. You just need to do it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yes, it's Ken Aaron.
This is really, I don't know if anybody's discussed this, but there's, in these times with the unwarranted search warrants and all the activity the government's doing, obviously the CIA to target this and so forth, Pacifica should implement a Title VII education program to shield itself from lawsuits, because it's the easiest way to attack a nonprofit is to send a provocative person in. To develop a sexual or racial harassment suit, that you can shield yourself from that by doing a low-cost employee education program that are available all over the internet, and then in court you won't lose the case. But I mean, those cases will happen because it's a real easy way to defeat us, and it's a cheap solution. So I don't know who in HR is in charge of that, but I don't believe you have one in place, and they're in all the corporations. All the corporations do it. It's local.
Thank you. And next is Israel, and after that is Chandra Hoppe.
Yeah, Israel Boyer here again. A couple of things. It would be nice, it would be good, it would be useful if the board could report back to us minimally at least what the topics or issues were of your executive sessions. It would be good to hear that. I may have missed it, I don't believe so. I'd like to hear that until today. Also, it'd be good to report back again briefly the essence of what was learned or what impact your seminar or self-education class was on Thursday, I believe it was, because that's an issue, the race and nationality one, which always besieges us with something come out of that we need to know that would be useful and be instituted. As to the various issues concerning WBAI, it's really troubling, to put it mildly, to someone who wasn't familiar with this. And I hope this isn't taken the wrong way, but it reminded me, honestly, of a film I saw years ago called King of Hearts. Anybody remember this? In which a soldier decides it's better to go in the asylum than to stay out in the madhouse of the world. And it's hard to know where the maddest is. I say this with a smile in a friendly manner, but seriously, we need to find ways to resolve our conflicts so that ego and power tripping and control don't overwhelm common sense and rationality, all of which we have. And there are a couple of ways for that. One is called mediation. We need to have a permanent in-house mediation process with assistance, with outside resources where necessary. To deal with this, the managers and the executive director shouldn't be burdened, nor are they necessarily qualified to do that. This is serious enough over the years, not just recently, to take care of. And that relationship also, there should be, I think, an ombudsperson position for at least handling listener complaints and concerns, if not also in-house.
Good morning, afternoon. I'm Chandra Houtman, here to speak to you today as a member of the KPFA Local Station Board and the Take Back Pacifica Movement. Yesterday, I was so proud of our foundation. when we decided to leave our meeting and to go out and support a very, very important group that I think is in this country. All of us, we're all immigrants, and yet many of us are oppressed by our society. The dissident PNB instituted rules of censorship and a gag order that all of us united to fight against, all of us on the board here and all of us in the audience. Are we any better today than the dissident board we fought? What practices of our board members will we regulate next? Freedom of assembly? Freedom of religion? While our president financially and intellectually bankrupts our country to fight wars we do not support and limits the freedom of certain sectors of our society based on how they look, the religions they practice, and their countries of origin, and our government hijacks legally elected presidents so they can be replaced with regressive, anti-democratic regimes, we fight over petty differences. Instead of learning how to work together and communicate in a nonviolent fashion, we need to heal from within. We need to fight real repressive forces from outside our network instead of creating and perpetuating our own antagonisms. We need to do this now, today. It is really urgent before all of Pacifica voices are silenced.
And after that, Sam Gordon.
Yeah.
My name is Nia Beniaco, and I'm a listener member of WBAI and also chair of the local programming committee. I decided to come out here today because I wanted to hear more about the current program policy that was discussed. If you guys remember in D.C., I mentioned that then it was about 3 months, I guess. The local programming committee came up with a very detailed questionnaire that we sent to the program council and to the program director, asking some of those very questions that are here in this packet. And our charge is to evaluate the process for program evaluations. I have gone to every single solitary program council meeting all of last year, and I think we might have had a quorum for 2 meetings. I'm happy to see, well, they're not here anymore, that the news director was here and the public affairs director were here. The program council has 8 members. I don't remember how it's constituted, on page, down, at whatever the things are. I haven't gotten all that down yet. I do know that there's supposed to be 8 staff members, and in that 8, the program director, the public affairs director, and the news director, who else is there?
Operations.
And the operations director. So since I saw the news director here and the public affairs director here, I have all confidence that when I go back to New York and the next program council convenes, I have all confidence that I will see them here. I will see them there, rather. And on that note, I'd like to thank Eva and all the staff members of KPFK for having us here, and I will see you in New York. If we are not that bad, don't believe the hype.
And after that,
hi. I wanted to address the change of the bylaws to elect another at-large person. I am also concerned about Pacifica going towards a self-selecting board, and it really bothers me a lot. And it seems to me that if there's any way to avoid doing that, that we should. And I heard several people today, or several people yesterday, say that they would be willing to go back to their LSB and have another person, person of color, take their place. And it seems to me that this, that there should be a collective discussion both on the P&V as to, you know, people, if there are a couple of people who are willing to do it, a collective discussion as to who would be appropriate, you know, to do it if people, if those three people wanted to have that, were willing to do that and to go back to their LSBs, and also encourage perhaps a collective discussion among the LSBs themselves as to how to solve this problem. I don't think that it's a great idea for Pacifica to model its bylaws according to the CPB. On the other hand, this is an instance in which I think we all agree that we do want to have as much diversity as possible. And if the various LSBs, if we're thinking about bylaw changes, perhaps having LSB guidelines for electing people parallel those of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, that it would not set us up for a lawsuit which many of us were afraid of being subject to, having actual racial guidelines, and it would create a diverse situation where we don't have this problem in the future.
Thank you. Myla Risen, for her, is a fishing fall.
I just want to say that I'm hoping that you won't, that you'll decide not to populate a committee to investigate members of local station boards and the PMB, and I'd like to cede the remainder of my time to Casey McCall.
Thank you, and thank you, Myla. I also wanted to talk to you about populating that committee, and I'd like to explain to you the reasons why I'm so opposed to such a committee. I didn't get to know my grandmother very well. Before she passed away at the end of her life, she spent quite a bit of time in prison. She was a union organizer, and information collected as a result of investigations by the government were used to convict her of conspiracy to overthrow the government by violent means. She was in her 60s. My grandfather, who was a poor immigrant, came here and found work in a steel mill and was the first man to wear a union button into Bethlehem Steel. As a result of government investigations against him, they tried to deport him. When that didn't work, they hit him in the back of the head with a crane, and he was in a coma for 7.5 months. Both of my parents have been denied different jobs that they've applied for as a result of government investigations that resulted in FBI files. I have at times been denied the right to board a plane. I've had bank accounts frozen because of government investigations against me. And my son, who's a college student in Boston, has consistent visits from the FBI, who are investigating him because of comments he may have made or things he may have written. They've told him that they believe that they have evidence that he may fly a plane into the White House. I can't get him to get off the couch and take his dishes. Needless to say, when I hear something about the government investigating its own people, I become immediately concerned. In Pacifica, you are the government. And when people in power believe that they hold themselves to a higher moral authority and can make decisions on what people do or say and come to conclusions about that, and then try to mete out some sort of justice, we're going in the absolutely wrong direction. As an organizer who's been around for many, many years, I was taught to organize probably at the same time I was taught to walk. I've learned over the years to immediately recognize when people use important social justice issues for their own personal reasons or political reasons. And where this committee began just splashed that immediately.
I have immense respect for Ambrose Lane. We both come from community action backgrounds, and we think alike. And I believe that Ambrose's attempt to, I don't know, mediate the situation, his action as far as amending the motion made it so that it would not be so personalized and make it a broader an attempt to broaden the things and not make things so personalized. Unfortunately, I don't think that that's enough. I think that if you on the board really care about racial justice, then you'll use your time as board members to figure out how affirmative action is working. You'll set measurable outcomes and figure out how to track what your outreach is doing in every station area. You'll match those outcomes up station to station, and you'll match those to demographics. If you care about Pacifica, you'll figure out as board members what you need to do to raise money to implement your race and nationality policy that's been sitting for 15 months. Thank you. I want you to do your job. I want you to stop wasting our time and our money on these petty things. I want to come to the next meeting and not hear a single thing about a single individual. And I want you as board members to do what you have to do to make this foundation work. Stop being children. Thank you.
I was going to change my time, Casey, but I think
she
said what she needed to.
So you don't want to speak?
No.
Okay, it's Carolyn Burden. Yeah, I'll do the trauma behind it. Carolyn Burden, and then after her is Steve Brown.
Give us like 4 o'clock.
I'm sorry.
Steve took Laverne to the hospital.
Okay. I'm Carolyn Burden, and I'm wearing my WBAI LSB hat for the moment, rather than the Elections Committee hat. And I want to speak about two things. One of them is a policy that I would hope the board will implement. We have received recently a $100,000 gift at WBAI, which is very welcome. What we don't have is insurance from WBAI or from Pacifica that this accords with any policy which does not accept gifts from someone who is either on the air or seeking access to the air or related to someone on the air. The foundation, so far as I know, has no such policy. I'm against anonymous donations for that very reason. If people want to remain anonymous, then at least the membership must be assured that the money comes without any strings. It's not enough for someone to say, yes, it comes without strings. I need to know that it conforms to a very well-defined policy. And I would urge the board to create such a policy immediately and apply it retroactively, beginning with this $100,000 grant and moving forward. All of our money should be untainted. And we should know that it's just a donation. It's not someone looking for access to our air, which is not an impossible situation. My second point has to do with the question of the policy by the LSB board regarding freedom of speech holding the Enzo issue. For the record, there is somewhere online a statement by DiVienzo that he received something between, I believe, 500 and 1,000 first place votes. So it's a significant constituency that's being unrepresented. Don't quote me on that, because I'm not sure of the exact number, but I know it was a significant number. If you're going to refer the motion that would restore his constituency, their representation, please deal with the fact that the WBI website has on it two statements attacking political opponents of the majority faction led by our LSB chair, who is responsible for this, I believe, in such a way as to encourage lawsuits by their targets. These two statements on the website are a problem, and we should look at them. Require that the chair of the LSB remove them. They are ugly, they are vindictive. And I would urge you to protect yourselves and the foundation by looking at those carefully.
Thank you. Brother Cheyenne, and then Jane Jackson.